League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, Baytown? Hey, how we doing? It's a Wednesday hump day on The Killer Bees. Welcome to The Hive. The buzz is Patrick Creighton in, Jeremy Branham still out, Tyler Scott in for Brendan, and we are ready to roll on a Wednesday. Fellas, what is going on?
Well, I just want to address this because people have asked. Jeremy does not have COVID.
No, he does not.
Jeremy is just on vacation. He's chilling. He, had days he hadn't taken yet, needed to take them. But Jeremy does not have COVID. He is not ill. He is just enjoying life, he and his young bride and their family, and doing fun stuff.
He was at the U of H game yesterday.
And hence I am here.
So you are the hippopotamus. Thank God he didn't test positive, because otherwise you wouldn't be giving out that information.
I would not. I would be silent
on
all of that.
So he's just on vacation. That's what a lot of people do this time of year. Just FYI. So we get off the air yesterday, and news breaks late. The passing of a legend, and I don't think I overstepped my boundaries here, fellas, when I said this on Twitter today, although I did get one ex-Rocket who thought that I made the comparison a little strongly, but I said John Madden is to football what Santa Claus is to Christmas. And I don't think that's too far of a stretch, though I asked if anybody thought that. Eldridge Rakazner was the one that said he was more the Rudolph to Christmas. But John Madden passing away at 85, and you talk about iconic. And so many different ways. The fact that he touched so many different lives is just amazing.
Now, at first glance, when you first put that out, my first reaction was, all right, Joe, we're pushing a little too far here on the hyperbole. But then I thought about it a little bit in terms of the marketization of the NFL. And Santa Claus, of course, the marketization.
Yeah.
And commercialization of Christmas. How much did John Madden play into the marketization and commercialization of the NFL at a time where the league was, you know, when he was a head coach, the league was nowhere near as mainstream as it is now. It was not the new de facto pastime, but it was, you know, certainly gaining ground. The television contract certainly helped, but Madden's personality, Madden's marketability in all the other things that he did. The Madden football game is the flag bearer of every sport video game, period, the end. Doesn't matter what sport it is. Everything, the Madden franchise is the flag-bearing franchise of sports. And how many kids who, you know, got into playing video games long before they were watching NFL broadcasts probably never heard a Madden broadcast or heard so few, know who John Madden is because of the extreme popularity of the video game.
This is taking Calvin Murphy's legend to a different level, because I always say to people that see Murph on the television broadcast for the Rockets, there's a majority of the population that just sees him as being the crazy suit-wearing guy on the Rockets games, as opposed to a guy that's a Hall of Fame and NBA player that was a legendary college and pro basketball player, which a lot of people don't know. But when you think about how John Madden, and I was tweeting this morning about the fact that he was allowed in so many more living rooms than any president of the United States or talk show host or anybody else, because he did what he did. He was the youngest to ever win a Super Bowl at 33, I think it was, or he was hired at 33, but he was the youngest to win a Super Bowl when the Raiders won the Super Bowl. Then he just upward and quit because he felt like his family life was suffering. If you didn't see the documentary, and I tweeted out last night, they did an emergency running. I think Tyler and I were watching it at the same time at 8 o'clock last night. And you think about first of all, he's right. He never worked a day in his life because he was doing what he loved across the board. When he walked away from football, I'm sure even he didn't know what he was going to do next. And he basically said he didn't want to do broadcasting. And then all of a sudden, he became the premier broadcaster for the NFL. And then on top of the NFL, you mentioned the video game. And then to reach another totally different segment of the population and the youth and all the different people that play video games, the Madden experience with all those video games with his name on it and his voice transcended yet another group of people to where I don't know that anybody has touched more people without ever directly touching them. It's like saying he was like your best friend, or I said your favorite uncle, because he was always that guy that everybody wanted to be with, that felt like they knew, that wanted to spend time with. But like 99% of the population had never met him or had an experience with him, but felt like they loved him and knew him and thought he was the greatest thing in the world.
A funny thing is, I wasn't old enough, you know, and I'm going to be 49 in a few months. I wasn't old enough to see, you know, the Raiders when John Madden was the head coach. You know, he retired after the 78 season, and, well, I was like four. So I didn't get to see that part of him. And, you know, back then you didn't have the internet where any information you wanted at your fingertips. But you'd always heard Madden was this great coach. And, you know, there'd be different, like, inside the NFL used to run on regular TV. And they'd have, like, all the sports highlight packages. They'd run every Saturday. You could see that run and see different highlights of old footage. And that's how you learned who Vince Lombardi and Hank Stram were from all the old NFL films videos that would show. John Madden's career record as a coach is insane. Mm-hmm. It is the highest winning percentage of anyone in the history of the league to have at least 100 wins. He is 103, 32, and 7 in 10 years. He averaged more than 10 wins a year for 10 years. And outside of 1978, when they were 9-7, he never lost more than 4 games in a season, which is insane. And I was spoiled, because growing up in New York, John Madden and Pat Summerall, back in the days when CBS owned the rights to the NFC, John Madden and Pat Summerall in the 80s called almost every Giants game. I always thought, as a kid, I thought, oh, these are just our announcers. We always have Pat Summerall and John Madden. Pat Summerall was a kicker, longtime kicker for the Giants. John Madden's the, you know, I didn't know as a kid, oh, John Madden, number one color guy. Just, hey, it's John Madden. He's a Pat Summerall. This is how it goes. And I was spoiled because I got to have them every Sunday. And only when you get older and you realize who these guys are and what they mean, and then you're in the industry and what they've meant to your own industry, do you realize, like, how lucky you were that, hey, I got to have two of the all-time greatest every Sunday bring me football, tell me stories, give you the flashbacks, tell you things about, you know, well, the game's gone by, and, you know, Madden as a coach and Summerall as a player, and all the different things that they'd seen and heard. And In 1984, the Giants were, it's their second year under Bill Parcells. And Madden and Summerall are the broadcasters all the time. And Jim Burt, the Giants had beaten Washington, and Jim Burt was mad at Bill Parcells because they had an argument earlier in the week, and Parcells was riding them really hard. So Jim Burt came up with the idea of, I want to dump Gatorade on Bill Parcells after the win. But he didn't want to do it because he was already in the doghouse and didn't want to be further in the doghouse. So we got Harry Carson, Hall of Fame linebacker, and one of Parcells' favorite players, to do the deed for him. 2 years later, it became a tradition where the Giants were dumping Gatorade after every win. And it had become like a national phenomenon. This is the first team where the Gatorade bath is a regular thing. We get to Super Bowl 21, and here's John Madden breaking down Gatorade buckets in the Super Bowl.
There's we see the buckets. Now there's a third bucket this week. I think what happened, there's always been like a mother and father. Like this is a father bucket, this is a mother bucket, and since the last game, they had a baby bucket. So this is a baby bucket. So they got three now. There always been two. One's going to go to Parcells, one's going to go to another assistant, and one will go to a player later in the game.
I don't know where the hell he came up with this stuff, but when I was, you know, watching this, you know, January 1987, I thought this was hilarious.
Oh, yeah. Well, but, you know, and for me growing up watching the Packers, and then when the Packers with Brett Favre were in their heyday, that was where Madden ended up evolving to and doing a lot of those games. And we knew that there was just a never-ending love of Brett Favre from John Madden. And watching the documentary last night, one of the great stories that I took away from that I was just chuckling over and over about, because you didn't realize you saw a side of Madden sometimes and his sense of humor that you didn't get with all the things he was doing. Favre tells the story about how when they used to get together for production meetings, it was never about football. And in one particular case, it was about Uncle Rube. So Uncle Rube, as Favre's going to tell the story, but Uncle Rube was a great uncle of one of his Favre's college teammates, but that's the kind of thing Madden liked to get into.
We were on the bus, and he would ask questions like, who you got coming to the game? I just remember I had a bunch of guys I played college ball with that came in, and I told him, one of the guys was coming in town had an uncle, a great uncle, called Uncle Rube. And somehow we got to talking about, and I don't want to reveal too much, but Uncle Rube had an uncharacteristically large sack. John thought that was the most hilarious thing in the world. Lo and behold, the next day, Reggie White got a sack, and he squeezed in Uncle Rube in the telecast.
Well, that's the old Uncle Rube stuff.
He just runs right into that sack.
Uncle Rube was Uncle Rube. I don't know. I can't say it.
In fact, they call that one as
Uncle Rube. The Madden responses were priceless. If you haven't seen the documentary, you have to see it, because what was interesting to me and meaningful in reading up on this afterwards was it ran Christmas Day. Madden was able to see it start to finish, as well as a lot of the different quotes and things as they were coming in. But the way it's set up, he sits in a big chair with monitors in front of him, and they fire off all these different quotes and basically tributes from players and coaches and things. And the way he reacts, and his reactions are just priceless. And you think about it, and I was thinking about it last night after it was over, going, he essentially saw his own eulogy. He saw so many of these different legends from Montana and Parcells and Belichick and all these different guys. Lawrence Taylor, who is all about himself, said that for all the media he wouldn't give the time of day to, if they needed anything about John Madden, just tell me when and where. He's like, if Madden thought I was cool and how great the All Madden team was, but his sons and what they said about him too, when I turned it off, I was like, oh my God, he was actually able to take in basically his own eulogy before he passed away. And the timing was, that was Saturday, and he passed away yesterday. So it was absolutely crazy.
And, you know, I haven't gotten to see it yet, although listening to Charlie and Tyler earlier, that's going to be available on, what did you say, it was on ESPN Plus?
It's on ESPN Plus right now.
Fox, FS1.
It will be on, I know, it's streaming on ESPN Plus right now.
Okay, and FS1, it ran last night, FS1 and again, I think.
Tonight, or Fox, one of those.
At 8 o'clock Central, yeah.
So I've got my night planned out with my Disney Plus ESPN Plus combo package. I've got the John Madden documentary, And then I've got the new Boba Fett series that comes out today. I'm planned for the night. I'm good.
Yeah. Well, last night I was watching the Rockets game till I think Kurt Minifee was the one that tweeted out, "Hey, just in case you didn't know, Fox Sports 1 is going to air the rerun the Madden." And I was like, "Oh God!" And then when you go to the guide on DirecTV, it didn't mention that that's what it was. It said it was Colin Cowherd and then Skip and Shannon. So I just hit record on both shows.
Yeah, but it was an emergency broadcast.
So tonight, I started
normal Fox, 8 p.m. Eastern, so 7.
On Channel 26?
7 on Fox, yes.
Great, because I started watching it, and I was just only merely pausing it to check Rockets updates, because it was, once you start watching, it's so enthralling. You get so deep into it, I couldn't turn it off. And then, like I said, when you think about how timely it was with his passing, and then essentially like all these guys paying tribute to him, it was just amazing.
You're going to think about it, you know, if you are, you know, from New York, like myself, I got to grow up with John Madden calling Giants games from the mid-90s, mid-80s, all the way up to, like, 1991. If you live in this area, you know, you probably got plenty of John Madden calling Cowboys
games for sure.
And then, you know, you being in Wisconsin, you got John Madden calling Packers games. So, you know, the biggest teams, you know, and then, you know, the Niners being the other team from that era. Mm-hmm. If you were a big NFL fan, especially once they moved to Fox and it was NFC on Fox and they would put Pat Summerall and John Madden on whatever the big team, the best teams for that, you got to have, you know, you got to have the best.
You got national for a local game is what you did.
And that's, you know, you look back at that and you're like, wow, like, all the things I didn't realize. And how much did that, like, how much does that play into, well, what you do and don't like today?
Yeah, you took it for granted. All right, we got lots more to get to on Madden and other things, including that Rockets-Lakers game. So hang right where you are, and we'll continue to roll through. Before we go to the break, I want to tell you about the good people at Apollo Men's Health. Look, I've been telling you about them for quite a while. Dr. O's the best in the business. The reason is because your health is your wealth, and you have to invest in yourself like you do in the stock market. The fact is that from the boardroom to the weight room to the bedroom, as you get older, you have issues. And when you have issues that you don't take care of, you think that there's no way that you can ever get back to feeling like you once did. Well, thanks to Apollo Men's Health, you can. Men and women, it starts with hormone therapy, and they can do that for you on a weekly basis, or you can do it yourself at home, and they can teach you how and get you the product. But they can make sure that you have a spring back in your step. And they can take it in so many different ways for you, depending on what you want to do. You want to get on a workout program? Start with a full body composition analysis. You want to recover quicker? HGH peptide therapy. You want vitamins for your smoothies or fat burners that you can take to help you with weight loss? They've got that too. They've got two locations to better serve you near downtown Houston. The main thing you need to do is set up your first appointment. Go to ApolloMH.com. When you book that first appointment, you're going to find out most major insurance is accepted, discounts for military personnel and first responders. Mention my name, Joel Blank. You get a free B12 shot on your first visit, and then let the process go from there. They're going to ask you tough questions. You give them honest answers. They're going to put you on a program that works, and they're going to find your results. They're good people doing great things. It's the people at Apollo Men's Health.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. Administration of employee benefits is a hassle. Let HRNP eliminate those burdens and save you money. Visit HRP.net today. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
I just want to say in closing that it's been a great ride. And I want to thank everyone who's been along for any part of it. And speaking of great rides, I was lucky enough to be carried off the field after we won Super Bowl 11. Now, I was told it took like 5 or 6 guys to lift me up, and then they dropped me. But that's okay, because that was me and that was them. I mean, they aren't going to carry me off like, you know, some guy belonged to a carry. I mean, you carry him off for a while, boom, you dump him. I'm there and they're gone. But it was the happiest moment of my life. And today feels like the second time in my life that I'm being carried off the shoulders of others. Yet instead of off the field, it's into the Hall of Fame. And instead of five or six guys today, I ride in the shoulders of hundreds of friends, coaches, players, colleagues, family. And I just say this, I thank you all very much. And this has been the sweetest ride of them all. Thank you.
John Madden, the end of his Hall of Fame speech from his induction in 2006. And to give you an idea of how much Madden meant, not just to the game and to people within the game, but what he meant to broadcasts, right? After CBS lost the bid for the NFC rights following the 93 season, and Fox, which was an upstart network at the time, gained the rights. Everybody was after all the CBS employees because they were all now free agents. And between Fox, ABC, and NBC, this massive bidding war breaks out. Now, at the time, the maximum salary for a sportscaster was $2 million. Why that was, I don't know. But there was a maximum salary that was $2 million a year for a sportscaster. The bidding war between the three major networks to get John Madden obliterates that and just blows the salary maximum out of the water, and it's basically over. NBC was owned by General Electric in 1994, and they offered to make John Madden their worldwide spokesman. GE Rail was going to build him his own luxury train. He doesn't fly. So he turned down NBC, and then he was leaning towards going to ABC when Fox came in with a monster offer that was in the neighborhood of $8 million a year. John Madden made more money as a broadcaster than any player was making in the NFL. That's how big he was perceived to be by the three major networks for the rights for the NFL. He made more than any player.
He also was the only one to work for all four major networks.
Eventually, yes. He would work for, because after he left Fox, he'd go to ABC and do Monday Night Football. And then he was at Monday Night Football.
And Sunday Night Football became a thing with NBC.
Right. So for 2006, Sunday Night Football would now become a thing.
Yep.
And Sunday Night Football with NBC, as we learned, was going to get much better games than Monday Night Football. And then he wound up going to Sunday Night Football with Al Michaels. And then it was, so he worked with Al Michaels on Monday nights and then would go on to Sunday Night Football. And when he retired, Chris Collinsworth replaced him in the booth.
So you think about this from the standpoint of he worked for all four major networks, which is basically unheard of. You're talking about the money he brought in, but then you think about the fact that he went from NFL coach to broadcaster and getting all the money that he made there. And then just think about all the different companies that he spoke for. At one point, they said in the documentary that next to Michael Jordan, he was the most marketable and known spokesperson on the planet. So he had Miller Lite, and he basically put Miller Lite on the map for the way he would explode through all the background drops and everything else and burst in with his little mini tantrums that were so, you know, enjoyable for people to watch. Then he had the Outback with the Bloomin' Onion. Then he had the Dr. Pepper. Then he had, and he just kept going and going and going. And it was like, my God, he was just a cash generating machine. And that's well before we even talk about the video game. When you start thinking about the video game and the hundreds, it's in the billions of dollars, I believe, in terms of overall revenue for the Madden franchise for the video game. And he's getting a piece of that. And now that he's passed away, I'm sure his family still is too. But you think about the overall dollar figure associated with John Madden. It's incredible.
You mentioned Outback Steakhouse.
Yep.
The Madden Cruiser. Outback was the corporate sponsor for the Madden Cruiser.
It wasn't the original, but eventually.
He did for Verizon. He did for Rent-A-Center, right? Ace Hardware. Ace is the place.
That's right.
We know Ace is the place because of John Madden. We know, boom, Tough Actin' Connectin' because of John Madden. He did for Sirius. He did for Toyota. But I think the most prominent ones, the ones we remember the most, were the Miller Lite commercials.
Yes.
Excuse me. I'm not the same crazy coach who used to storm around the sidelines yelling sideline at the officials. I've learned to relax, and I drink light beer from Miller. You know that light's got a third less calories than a regular beer? And listen to this. Light doesn't fill me up. Besides that, light tastes fantastic. Oh, sure, there are a lot of other beers around, and you can drink any one you want. But let me tell you this.
Light beer from Miller. Everything you always wanted in a beer, and less.
As I was saying, I don't care what anybody else...
I mean, iconic. In so that's why I said you look at this from two different perspectives, right? It's the it's the money that he made, but also the fact that he never had to work a hard day's work in his life. And he said that. He said one of the beauties of being able to travel the country was he wanted to talk to people. He didn't care about talking about himself when people came up to him. He wanted to know about the dairy farmers. He wanted, and he said, when I realized that I was talking to a dairy farmer on one of the road trips, and I realized he doesn't get a day off. You got to milk those cows every single day. You got to work and work and work and work. And he said, from the fact that he went from coaching to broadcasting to a spokesperson role, he never worked a day of real work in his life and had the greatest life ever. And it's hard to argue with that. And the fact that, like I mentioned, he let everyone let him into their living room. And I think that the thing that we have to take away from here is that when you think about it, he touched different fan bases, different generations, different age groups. But even the most disinterested, uninterested NFL fan, when they heard John Madden's voice and they knew he was on TV, they stopped and paused and wanted to hear what he had to say because they knew it could be funny, it could be meaningful, but it definitely was conversational. And I think that's why we don't really realize the – that's why I said when I made the comparison, it's a stretch in certain ways, but it's not. Santa and Christmas, Madden and the NFL for sure with football because – Madden might be the most iconic single figure in NFL history. Next, you can say Vince Lombardi or you can say certain athletes that played the game, but he crossed over generations and age groups and interest levels.
He also crossed over outside of just football. You know, when you become that universal character where you didn't have to be a football fan to know who John Madden was because of all the commercials and all the endorsements that he had. Are you a Paul Simon fan?
I mean, not big. My sister's was a big Paul Simon fan.
All right, so you know the song Me and Julio Down by the Schoolyard?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hey, you've seen the video for that?
I don't recall.
All right, so in the video, there's a lot of cameos by...
Oh, that's like Chevy... Oh, I thought you could call me Al, like Chevy Chase and...
Yeah, that's... No, but this, you know, Me and Julio Down by the Schoolyard, John Madden is in the video.
Okay.
Also, because Mickey Mantle is in the video. In fact, in the video, Paul Simon gets Mickey Mantle on a swing and a miss. And then the next pitch, Mickey Mantle hits about 9 million miles. But it's the comedy of the video. But there were a lot of prominent people in that video. John Madden, one of them. So his appeal it went into music. He was in a YouTube video for Stuck in a Moment You Can't Get Out of. He was on Saturday Night Live.
He hosted Saturday Night Live. They tell the story in the documentary about how they just, what's his name, that ran NBC Sports? Ebersol.
Dick Ebersol.
Threw it out there because they knew that he basically was fearless, not knowing he would say yes, and he said yes and he killed it.
He was on The Simpsons. He was everywhere in a manner that really... no one to that point in time had ever even approached when it came to the NFL. We'll have little different sounds and stories for John Madden all day long. We'll also get into some kind of little positive from the Houston Texans for this week. It's coming up next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. Razor sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Batch trading in for Jeremy Branham alongside Joel Blank, Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN. That is your two-way sports talk hotline on the HRNP listener line. Also on the text line, at Pac-Man Joel, at Pete Creighton 1, Tyler Scott on the other side of the glass at the master controls and manning the DJ booth as well, at Tyler Drew Scott on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. And, you know, there's it's a season where there hasn't been a whole lot of positivity to talk about the Houston Texans. And a month ago, there was basically nothing at all that you could look at for the Houston Texans and say there is a positive. There was zero. Zip, zilch, nada. Last couple of weeks, and I understand there's who they played, etc. But Davis Mills has shown a lot of improvement, giving you a little hope that he can become a pretty good quarterback. And this week, Tevier Thomas, fresh off a game-sealing pick six against the Chargers, AFC Defensive Player of the Week. And look, I know it's a small thing, Defensive Player of the Week, grand scheme of things, doesn't mean a whole lot. But in a absolutely brutal season, where I think any positive news or anything that resembles hope resonates with fans right now, because they are looking for some reason to have hope, maybe Tevier Thomas is going to be a pretty good player. Maybe Davis Mills is going to be a pretty good player. Because a month ago, we're looking at this team and going, bloody hell, we don't even have any young talent. Maybe, not that they're going to be all pros, that they're going to be megastars, but maybe there's a couple of guys on the team that might turn out to be decent players.
Could you not have also said that in the running for that award, Jonathan Owens? Pick and a fumble recovery. And you know what? And a couple weeks ago when everybody was going, what the hell did they do that for? When he got a new contract from the Texans and people are going, well, why did they do that? And before that, all he was known as, and what I really felt bad about, was he had a hell of a game Sunday. And all you heard about was, that's Simone Biles' boyfriend. And look at Simone Biles reacting to her boyfriend getting an interception or getting a fumble. By the way, he got an interception and a fumble recovery. He's an NFL player. Give him his own props and his own due. But you're right. I mean, look, we keep saying, and I keep harping on, what I really wanted them to do all year was be in the game, but find a way to lose late, but at least keep hope alive. Well, you're keeping hope alive. You're mentioning Davis Mills now in a different breath than you would have been a few weeks ago when everybody was like, what a crap pick. This guy is not going to turn out to be anything. Boy, Caserio blew this one. Now, okay, on the other side of things, I'm getting tired of people putting him up there as one of the top two, along with Mac Jones, rookie quarterbacks in the NFL this year, and throwing stats at me. Okay, he's playing more than most, and he's also doing very well. But I'm not ready to anoint him the second best quarterback in last season's draft, but I am pleased to say that we still don't know where his ceiling is and that no one's ready to close the door on him, especially for next season.
I don't need to say, oh, well, he's better than Trevor Lawrence. Well, right now, Trevor Lawrence is playing on the worst team in football with the worst coaching staff. And, yeah, they have not managed him or coached him or helped to develop him in any way, shape, or form. Do I think Trevor Lawrence has more talent than Davis Mills? Every single day. But Davis Mills is playing better than he is right this second. And not that that matters 10 years from now, but right now matters for their development. What is Davis Mills going to be? Nobody questioned what Trevor Lawrence was going to be. Everybody questioned what Davis Mills was going to be. And that he has progressed as far as he has. You know, and he said, you know, playing early, game was going way too fast for him. Then he got put back on the bench, got to watch some more of Tyrod play, and saw things that he was doing wrong, was able to correct them, and now the game's slowing down a bit for him. It also helps that, you know, over the last couple of weeks, the Texans' offensive line has turned in their best performances of the season. And having a clean pocket, certainly a big help for Davis Mills, as look, you expect a rookie quarterback to take a little bit longer to get through his progressions, going to take a little bit longer to make all his reads, you know, and by longer, You know, longer in the NFL is 3/4 of a second, 1 second. That's longer in the NFL. So it takes them a half a second to a second longer to progress through a read than a veteran quarterback would. And he's actually had the time to do that. Didn't happen earlier in the season. Earlier in the season, he'd have been dead 3 times. So it's important to take all those things into consideration. But again, Davis Mills showing you some positivity, giving you some hope. A month ago, there was no hope on this team. Not at quarterback, not at receiver. And Nico Collins starting to play well. Earlier in the season, he wasn't even allowed off the bench. You know, you're getting, you see a few different things from guys on special teams, in the return game, defensive players, Owens, Thomas. Maybe there is some young talent on the team, because a month ago we didn't think there was. A month ago, this is no different than a year ago, except we know coming into the season, 100% no Deshaun.
I think the big thing is that people need to temper all this hope, too, with the fact that with expectations, that means win down the road. You know what? You've gotten more wins than what Vegas said you would get 4. So you're right at it right now, or 3. So maybe you even have reached the over.
4.5 is the number that the last number I saw. But yeah, 4, I didn't think the Texans were going to win 4 games.
I didn't either. And you know, Jeremy and I talked about before the season, and he said, you know, the ceiling could be 6. I'm like, there's no way in hell this team wins 6. Now I hope there's no way in hell they try. They've done enough to show you enough to give you hope, but now you don't want to win yourself out of the positioning that you need in the draft, so that you can continue to make this turnaround quicker and have the rebuild go sooner rather than later. So that's why, look, I mean, no one gave them a snowball's chance in hell of beating the Chargers last week, and they did. Just like a few weeks ago, no one thought they could beat the Titans, and they did. But now if they beat the Niners and they finish this whole thing out with 2 wins, God forbid when we get to draft day and people are like, why aren't they being able to trade down and get more assets and do more things? And why isn't there more demand? Well, it's because they won too much. That's what you got to be careful of. You've built back hope, which is great. You've gotten people to start. And here's the thing, realistically, though, Pat, and I don't know where you sit on this, but I think that as much hope as we've seen with Davis Mills and some of the things that we talked about, I don't know how much hope there is as from a coaching perspective, from the standpoint of if you had to go out, this is another reason why David Culley's going to be back. Because if you had to go out right now and convince of, say, there's 6 or 7 openings at the end of the year, if you had to go out and convince potential candidates, the Texans is the job for you. I don't think anybody looking for a job would say that they could number that job higher than the worst or the 7th of if there were 7 openings available in the NFL, because of the fact that you still have Jack Easterby. You still have an owner that seems like he is completely clueless. You still have a roster depleted of most talent, though we've mentioned some of the reasons why you should be hopeful that there are at least some players you don't know who you're going to have next year. Because I don't think that when you talk about the turnaround from this year to next season, I still don't think 75% or more of the roster is going to be on that roster next season if they have it their way. So I think that if you're looking at it from the standpoint of is there hope, sure. But how does that rate in terms of the attractiveness of the franchise from a player or a coaching perspective? I think they're the worst possible choice for players and for coaches when you look at the vacancies coming up or potential vacancy that could come up this offseason.
Yeah, you know, and look, I think that the Niners defense is going to be too much for them to really put a lot of offense on the board for. I think they'll lose. With Trey Lance at quarterback, I think the Texans will lose a close game. But then you've got the Titans week 18, and maybe that game doesn't matter for the Titans. They get a 5th win. Now you're in Seattle, Carolina, Bears territory. Does that drop you now below both teams in the swamps of Jersey and take you from 3-6? And that, I don't think that's where they want to be. It's selfish to say it from the point of view of, oh, I want them to lose because I want better draft picks. Players don't want to lose. They want to win. So it puts them in a conundrum there. But they're showing you they've got a few players who deserve to be here next year and maybe deserve to be here a little longer than that. And most importantly, the quarterback looks like he's going to be something. Before we hit the break, I'll tell you about carsforkids.org. You know that old clunker that's sitting in your driveway, rusting up, collecting leaves, becoming a bug haven that your wife's probably been yelling at you for years to get rid of? Well, now you can finally get rid of that car and do something good with it at the same time. You can donate it to carsforkids.org. They accept all vehicle donations. So cars, trucks, motorcycles, they take them all. Any condition, running or not. You get a full tax write-off for your donation, and when you mention ESPN Houston, you get a $50 Visa gift card as well. Can't find the title? Doesn't matter. They'll do all the title work for you. Pickup is free. Your donation benefits Houston Can Academies, helping to give local Houston kids a second chance at a diploma. So go to carsforkids.org, carsforkids.org, or call 713-225-4226, 713-225-4226. Donate that old vehicle and write off the car, not the kid.
ESPN 97.5. Razor sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the killer bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
So, Joel, when we're talking about, you know, the Texans having hope, we also kind of touched on the idea of, well, what David Culley coming back, not coming back. Where would the Texans be in the hierarchy of potential job openings? Because, well, the Jaguars have an open job and the Raiders have an open job. And
Giants could.
Giants very well could. The Bears most likely.
Bears will.
The Vikings will likely have a job opening. You know, there are teams. There's about seven jobs that are open after the season, and we're basically 2 weeks away from Black Monday. So if we were to take a look at, let's say we put the Texans in the mix just for the sake of discussion and comparison, where would you put the Texans as a job in comparison to all the other jobs?
Dead last.
And it's not like not even a blink of an eye, right?
No, you know why? It's gotten worse. They're dead last because of the fact that you can start with the roster depleted and the fact that they're just trying to, you know, skate through a season while Nick Caserio tries to dig his way out of the Bill O'Brien left Grand Canyon sized hole of cap casualties and overspending and all the ways that he completely just sold off assets at pennies on the dollar. But then you talk about the Jack Easterby factor and the fact that you've got a guy that's manipulative. You got a guy that's basically a huge negative to the fan base and everybody that has any kind of attachment or following for the franchise or nationally or locally talk about when it comes to the Texans. Almost initially, aside from Deshaun Watson, Jack Easterby's name's going to come up. It's a negative. And then you get the story of a week ago when the general manager, as well as the whatever you want to call Romeo Crennel, vice president of consulting, are on the headset in the coaching box on game days. No coach wants that. No one signed up for that. No one. You can judge a coach's performance based on wins and losses and overseeing practice or seeing and hearing what players have to say and what they do. But that's just another killer factor when coaches are looking at gigs going, well, let's see, I could go to this franchise, or if I'm Minnesota, I know I've got receivers. I know I've got some players that can play. I know I've got a running back that's paid like the franchise. Whether he's a game manager or not, I got a quarterback that can do some things. That's pretty advantageous to me. I got a chance to make the playoffs next year. Or I can look at the Texans situation and go, I don't have that. Plus, I've got too many people meddling in my soup. Too many people trying to cook in my kitchen. That's why I think they're last.
There's a lot of reasons why you can think that. Number one, what is the quarterback situation? Again, Davis Mills, young quarterback. He has played a handful of games. Looks like maybe he can develop into something, but that is still a development in progress. They have a massive lack of talent up and down the roster. And let's face it, ownership is a mess. There is, if we take Jack Easterby completely out of the equation, which I think for last season up through the hiring of the general manager is completely impossible. Since the hiring of Caserio, much more palatable a discussion. But has Cal McNair at any point since the passing of his father demonstrated in any manner any kind of competency as an owner or even competency, the ability to just speak into a camera without reading from a teleprompter? That's an issue. You can't trust whether or not the owner has a sense of what winning football is or isn't about, and you can't trust that the owner has an idea of how to put the right people in place. And, you know, in addition to the things that you mentioned, dead last. Now, dead last also opens up for you the idea of you have the highest ceiling because you're already at the bottom. So if you are successful, you are a super success story. Traditionally, the Texans are a patient organization in that, you know, this is their fourth head coach. The first three were all given pretty good amount of rope before they were ultimately dismissed. But it's hard to, and if we took, like, Bill Barnwell did an article and he put seven teams as having an opening, and I'm with you, I would add the Giants into that as well. Mm-hmm. They didn't. But if we're going 1 through 8, the Texans are number 8. And that doesn't mean they won't get a head coach, because as we see, no matter how bad once upon a time the Detroit Lions were, the Jaguars are, the Jets have been, the Tampa Bay Bucks once couldn't win a game for an entire season either. You know, every team always manages to find a head coach because there's only so many of them, and you might not get another opportunity. But I'm with you, they're dead last. Now, from that perspective, who would you consider to be the best job?
I mean, Minnesota's up there if indeed it's open. The Giants could be up there simply because of the fact you do get a true clean start, but you get two first-round picks in the top 6. So you've got two picks to start with. You've got a franchise-type running back that you can base something on. So you have an opportunity there. I think when you look at it, it just depends on what your end goal is, and we don't know all the jobs. I think from a Chicago standpoint, you have what you think is a franchise quarterback. You have some nice pieces. You still have Khalil Mack. And again, it's going to be another completely fresh start, because you're going to have general manager probably gone in both Chicago as well as head coach. If that's the case, then you truly get to work with someone that you probably know, as opposed to being picked by someone you don't or you don't know that well. And you have some things to work with. So I think that they would be up there. I don't know who you think, but I think that, again, we're just speculating on what jobs could or should be open. But I think that's where I'd start. Minnesota and the Giants and then the Bears probably.
I think Minnesota, definitely, because if the new coach they bring in is able to get a little bit more out of Kirk Cousins, they've got a lot of talent. The ownership there is also known to be patient. They don't have a lot of cap flexibility, but as we've seen from Kansas City, cap flexibility is very subjective. And you can go from $46 cap space to $10 million cap space in the blink of an eye. So I don't necessarily consider that to be a massive detriment. The Giants have a lot of early draft capital. Can the next coach get more out of Daniel Jones, or do they make a trade for Russell Wilson, or, you know, do they draft another quarterback? You're going to have next year, whoever their quarterback is going to be, you're going to have that. You're going to know. I think the Broncos are a very interesting job, because they, another team, has a lot of young talent. It's a young roster. They got a ton of cap space. And that's a team that the difference between what they are now, you know, banging around 500, a little under, versus being a legitimate playoff team is a quarterback. And if they have a top quarterback, they might be good enough to get up there and look Kansas City dead in the eye and say, we're coming for you. I don't know that they can get that guy, but they'll certainly try. The idea that, you know, we don't know what's going on with the ownership, with the Bowden Family Trust and the fighting in the Bowden family over, you know, which kid should be the one who's ultimately going to be the day-to-day operations runner, and one is the oldest daughter versus the youngest daughter. The oldest daughter is from Pat Bowlen's first marriage. The youngest daughter from his second marriage. Of course, his current widow wants it to be her daughter. So, but that hasn't impacted them really so far. So I don't really look at that as a negative.
I don't know that it's going to be open. I know Fangio's been lobbying for his job, right? He's already saying he deserves at least one more year.
If you have to lobby, you're out. And if you do come back, your leash is going to be so short that it's not even worth it. To me, if you've got to lobby and beg to keep your job, that's not the job you want. You're never going to be on stable footing there. What are the Carolina Panthers? Because they've got an excellent defense. They've got a lot of young players. They desperately need a quarterback. They also need Christian McCaffrey to stop getting hurt. They have very little draft capital, especially this season.
Look, at the end of the day, it's just essentially you're weighing resources. You're weighing resources and thinking, what is the most advantageous job for me? If it's your first time getting into a gig, you're David Culley, you'll take whatever you can get. If you're a guy that's been there and done that, you're probably going to be a little bit more particular, trying to get a situation that's going to be a winning situation for you in a short period of time, right?
And that's, you know, when you weigh all those things, that's kind of why I look at the Texans, and as much as I'd like them to get a really good head coach and move forward, it's hard to say that they are a desirable job, because no matter what, they're going to be the least desirable job of all of them. Rockets looked a lot better last night, came up short, but certainly played much better than they did the night before and put a little scare into the Lakers. We'll get into that next. The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5.
We have the world.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.